Support for NPR podcasts comes from Elsevier, publisher of The Lancet, advancing health policy and medicine worldwide in print, online, and now podcasts at thelancet.com.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. My next guest is one of the fathers of the birth control pill, but he has turned away from the chemistry lab. Well, we did that many years ago. To pen plays for the theater, and his most recent is called Taboos, and is playing for the next 3 weeks here in New York. And the play tells the story of two couples trying to become parents through artificial means. One is a lesbian couple, the other an infertile Christian husband and wife, and the play raises some really interesting and complicated questions about reproduction when sex and children no longer go hand in hand. So what does it mean to be a parent in the modern world of birth control, infertility drugs, test tube babies, when we all can interchange our sperm and egg and then raise children with surrogate parents, all kinds of issues, very interesting issues. Carl Gerassi is the playwright behind Taboos and Professor Emeritus at the Department of Chemistry at Stanford University. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks very much.
Good to have you back. What's the catalyst for this play?
Well, that's my preoccupation during the last probably 20 years when I started moving from a laboratory to becoming an author, first of novels and then of plays. I really first started with the issue of reproduction. What is happening in this world? The increasing separation of sex and reproduction. Sex as usual in usual places. Reproduction more and more under the microscope, under other assisted conditions. Mm-hmm. And the implication that it has, not so much just the scientific ones, but really the societal ones. And that includes everything from women's rights and the power position of men and women, the power relation of women and women in sex and reproduction, all the way to religion. Incidentally, I want to make one correction. You introduced me by saying, not introduced the play by saying, a lesbian couple and a Christian couple. A Christian is not really correct. It is a fundamentalist couple because it wouldn't make any difference whether they're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or anything else. But I wanted to say fundamentalist. Mm-hmm. And fundamentalist doesn't have to be fundamentalist Christian, although in this case it is. Mm-hmm. Because I think that is another issue that I find is necessary to address, namely people who have very preconceived notions about what is proper and improper in sex and reproduction, and yet they themselves frequently violate it, which to me is a form of hypocrisy to which we should call attention, particularly in this politically charged climate right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you write these plays because you think these are dialogues that scientists should be having, but they don't speak out enough about them?
Well, that is true also of the fiction, the science fiction that I wrote first. I've written five such novels and now about eight plays. But that's the fundamental point. Scientists, I'm talking about active research scientists, don't spend the time of talking to the public for very obvious reasons. Not only don't they think they have the time, but they get no brownie points for it by their professional peers. And really, professional recognition in science depends entirely, absolutely entirely on your peers and not on the general public. So you really don't get any brownie points for that. And the people that are willing to do this, people like me, basically doing this when they are, emeriti or close to the end of their active professional career, which is extremely unfortunate. But I think we scientists have to talk to the public. And I am particularly interested in doing it in a dialogic format rather than just giving popular lectures or writing popular articles, because dialogue, really the most human form of intercourse, you might say, which was used in literature from the Greeks all the way through Galileo and to the Renaissance, is not used as a literary genre now except in plays. Mm-hmm. Now, the plays that I'm writing are intellectual plays. They are, I hope, also amusing, and there were a lot of laughs in the performance I saw right now of Taboos. But, you know, any play is only seen for a short while, and I really feel very strongly that plays can also be read as books, certain plays. Plays of Tom Stoppard, for instance, just to give an example, are wonderful literature. And just to call them plays is in a way demeaning them or limiting their exposure. And I feel very strongly about this. And this is why I'm delighted that actually this play was just published in book form just a couple of weeks ago by the University of Wisconsin Press under the excellent title, Sex in an Age of Technological Reproduction. And that's really the theme that I'm addressing.
Yeah, it is. The difference between having children just sexually reproducing and being parents, too.
Yeah, but that is a key point. Again, in the introduction, you asked the question, well, can we now have children, you know, without people? You're only talking about the reproduction, the actual fertilization in the next 9 months. Well, the 9 months, even that is done within the woman. But the fertilization, but what I want to focus on, the really important thing is we shouldn't always talk about how to become parents in a biological sense, but how we behave as true parents. In other words, fathers who all just always are preoccupied about genetic fatherhood, you know, the man's family name or the family blood, things like this, are inconsequential compared to the role that you're playing as a parenting father. And people who think that this impending separation of sex and reproduction will destroy or affect the nuclear family are totally wrong, in my opinion. Because if you, in fact, resort to more and more to assisted reproductive techniques for various reasons, and we can try and address them, not just infertile people, but fertile people, but you only do this once or twice in your lifetime, because in Europe, the average size family is now 1.5 children. In the United States, it's something like 2.1. So people have very few children. So the important thing is, what do they then do with the children? How do they behave toward the children? And that a wanted child, because any child produced by assisted reproduction is a wanted child, not an inadvertent one, not an accidental pregnancy, is a cement for a functioning family. And since both parents then want to have a child, I think they both are going to pay more attention to the parenting aspects of it, which I think makes it a much better and more meaningful nuclear family than just one which is a family in name only and where the mother plays most of the functions.
1-800-989-8255, talking with Carl Gerassi, playwright, writer, fiction, nonfiction, in particular his new play, Taboos, which is running here in New York. It's been running, we're running for about 3 weeks. Let's see if we can get a call in. Elaine in Fort Myers. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that this, it is a situation that happens only at reproduction, and yet it does go on. I conceived my son, almost, he's going to be 10 next month, by artificial insemination. And it's funny because I was talking with a colleague today. He just joined Cub Scouts. And so this weekend we're going on our first outing, and yet again I will be faced with relative strangers who almost look at our family with pity until they understand the situation. It's like we were never abandoned. Nobody left us. We're good to go. We're fine. This is our family. It's been like this for a long time, and we're just fine with it. And it's kind of interesting that it is an ongoing decision. It's an ongoing decision about this decision and about this type of family.
You're a single mom.
I am, yeah. By choice.
Yeah. Carl, any comment?
No, I don't have any comment, because, in fact, I write exactly in one of my novels, my third novel, Menachem Seed, I'm writing exactly about this kid, a professional woman, who decides to have a child, did not find the right man or didn't even want one, and is prepared to go through committed single motherhood. It is better to have two parents, but it is really particularly important to have one loving parent. Many people are born under conditions, many babies are born or children are born under conditions where they were totally unwanted. Remember, out of all pregnancies that occur in the world, about 50% unexpected, and 25% of them are unwanted. And that results, that's the reason why we have nearly 50 million abortions each year. So it is much, much better to have one loving parent than to have two lousy ones. And I think lots of people have these.
Okay, Elaine, thanks. Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. I find that your plays could be great educational tools. Do you find that schools are able to use them, or are your topics so controversial these days and not politically correct enough for a lot of schools that they shun them?
Well, forget about political correctness, but your question is a key question. Now, this play, Taboos, is written for the commercial theater and involves, you know, theater production and so on. I've written at the same time a play just called ICSI, I-C-S-I, and that is the technique that we're referring to, intercytoplasmic sperm injection, or the injection of a single sperm into an egg, which is one of the key methods that is being used, and that is having an enormous ethical and practical and reproductive consequences. And that play, which is a pedagogic wordplay just for two voices, and you just need to read them, you need no staging and so on, with audiovisual materials, also included in that same book with which came out in Taboos. And this has now been used in Europe, and actually also in Taiwan, because it was translated into German, before hundreds and hundreds of high school students that I saw, but I also saw it at two medical congresses. I saw it at the Royal Academy of Medicine in England. BBC Radio 3 broadcast it, where I played one of the roles, and the interviewer, Vivian Perry, a woman, Ira Flatow, in London, the other role. We didn't tell the people, it was before a live BBC audience, that in fact it was a pedagogic play that I had written, because it's in the form of a TV interview between a woman, green moderator, very critical moderator, and a scientist discussing these particular fields, subjects, so you get the pros and cons all the time. You don't just get one view. That's a very important thing, and I don't give them any answers. I only raise questions. And when we did this on the BBC, people had not realized that, in fact, we were doing a play of mine. They thought it was a real interview, because it was before a live audience, and then they announced that, in fact, it was a play, and everyone was rather amused by this. So I have very important pedagogic motives, and that is the reason why this paperback, which I happen to clutch in my hand, which is called Sex in an Age of Technological Reproduction, contains both plays. It contains the play Taboos, it contains a pedagogic wordplay ICSI, which is only 45 minutes long, so it fits into classroom, I think so, and it contains a CD with all the audiovisuals. It even shows a DVD of the actual ICSI injection, how you see the injection of a single sperm into an egg, which is very dramatic. There's nothing question of political correctness. There are no four-letter words in there. If people are embarrassed to look at this, then I think they fail entirely in sex education in schools, but mm-hmm. entirely.
Do you think that scientists could learn something from your place?
I beg your pardon?
Do you think that scientists, too, could learn things from your place?
I have no question whatsoever. I've done this better. First of all, if I ask a group of chemists, just tell me what is ICSI. Well, you know, 9 out of 10 haven't got the foggiest idea. And after all, most scientists, other than reproductive biologists or biologists, are really not any better informed about reproduction and the complicated social consequences than any other person. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are just all citizens. And I think this is not written down to an audience. It's written to a general audience. As I told you, it was done before the Royal Academy of Medicine, where the average audience was 60, and these were the hotshots of British medicine. And they were as taken and engaged by this as I saw it with high school students. Now, when I talk high school students, I basically mean juniors and seniors. It's not that younger ones can understand it, but I think the language is perhaps a little bit more sophisticated, because I really don't like to talk down to people.
I'm talking with Carl Girasi, author of the new play Taboos, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. Let's see if we can get another phone call in before we run out of time. Michelle in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, if you shut your radio off.
Yes. Hold on. But I had a question. I agreed to be an egg donor for a friend of mine, and the process went quite well, and so I did it again, but for someone that I didn't know. But it's just kind of a strange reality to me that when I go out in public, I'm not particularly fond of having children myself, but children who are of that same age range of around the period that I would have donated could technically be mine, and that's just a strange reality for me to kind of think about, and I wondered if you guys could comment on that.
I mean, as you were out in the street, you think, gee, this could be my kid.
Yeah, you know, especially if it's, you know, some screaming child. I'm like, well, you know, I need to be nice, because you never know.
Interesting, Carl.
I don't understand. Are you asking this question as an egg donor, or are you asking this in the case of a man as a sperm donor?
She's an egg donor.
Yes.
Well, I think, first of all, this is the key question in Taboos, namely even the generosity, because it is very easy for a man to be a sperm donor. You know, he just masturbates. For a woman, it is much more complex, and there are many more issues involved in this. And I have to say, I enormously admire women were generous enough to do this because they are believing in, first of all, helping parents who cannot have children, particularly women, and who feel very strongly they do not want to adopt but want to go through the intimate birthing process, even though it's not their own genetic child. And I think I can only commend the caller. I can only say I wish you would see my play, because you'll see there is the issue, the discussion, it's in this case a conflict, between a surrogate egg donor who also is a mother at the same time, because she donates one of her eggs to one woman, but the other one she does herself. And then the question is, who has, you know, mother's rights to which child? This becomes very complex. You seem to have done this in a simpler, more straightforward way, so maybe you wouldn't appear in my play, but I like what you said.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Michelle, have a good weekend. 1-800-989-8255. And you don't resolve you don't answer the things.
I feel very strongly, Ira, that I shouldn't, because then I become a preacher. I am a scientist and I'm a socially responsible person. I want to raise these crucial questions. I think this is the overpowering issue, the direction in which sex and reproduction go in this century. I want to show the facts, not just the scientific facts, which make these things possible, but the manner, the good and bad manner, because sometimes we use it very inappropriately, that these things are being used for. But in the end, they have to be private decisions by an individual. So I want to present them with the facts, and then I would then like to debate this. And in my plays, I want to provoke them. And I think it would be inappropriate for them to tell what Carl Giraffe thinks, because what I think is really only the opinion of one man. And so what? Why should that apply to others? This is why I really believe that sex and reproduction really cannot be legislated. Even many religions fail this. I mean, the best example is that the highest proportion of illegal abortions in the world right now are in all Catholic Latin American countries, or that Italy and Spain, you know, two all Catholic countries, have the lowest birth rates in Europe. And, of course, how do they do this? Clearly not by abstaining, but by using contraception. So you see here people are violating religious beliefs because their beliefs and feelings about sex and reproduction are even stronger. And I think we have to accept that, but we should be willing to debate them and not convince other people the correctness of our opinion, but accept the fact that there have to be compromises. These are not black and white issues. They're inherently gray ones, and you're only going to get gray answers.
Carl, I wish you great success and with your play, Taboos, in New York. Hopefully it'll get around the country so other people can see it there, too, or read it online now, as you say they can.
Well, they can read Sex in an Age of Technological Hypodactyl,
right.
The book.
Carl Giraffe, stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.